if you forget the fact that this is the first attempted assassination on a U.S. president in over 40 years, and forget that it's the biggest collapse in Secret Service protection in over 60 years, you still have the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen in my life.
Incredible.
9/11 and Sandy Hook were horrific on a scale that there's no scale for.
Yes.
This is unbelievable for a few other reasons. You have a former U.S. president shot in the head in front of thousands of people. That's hard to believe. But when I see how he turned his head.
Yeah.
Now, I watched graphic charts, slow-mo, trajectory. It's really unbelievable. It's the most unbelievable thing that I've ever seen, that he just turned his head and it skims his ear.
Wow.
But what clearly locked it in as the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen in my life is that seconds after he was shot in the head, he was looking for his shoes.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, gotta walk out of there and need shoes.
Shoes?
Shoes. Yeah, you want to walk out dignified.
Do you have slippery socks? Are you afraid to run in the socks?
You never know. Designer socks, maybe, you know.
Silk socks? I mean, you can't really run in silk socks?
No, you really can't, no.
Let's not one incident lead to a second here.
Yeah, yes. You can slip and fall.
Then, you layer on top of that, he gets up and does the fist pump.
That was amazing.
And such a cool, iconic picture. And this picture will live forever.
Oh, yeah.
The blood streaking his face.
Yep.
It's wild.
The look on his face, like, fight.
Right.
Like, that's what he's saying.
It's such a Trump thing.
It is.
Most people would be like, get me the F out of here.
I'd still be screaming.
Now, this wouldn't be funny, but think of it like a cartoon.
Okay.
Someone throws a snowball at you, and it misses, and then you put your head up, and like, you missed me, boom, right in the face.
Right.
Like, that could have happened.
That could have happened.
Not bright.
Yeah. Ballsy.
Iconic moment, but not bright.
It was ballsy.
Then he did it again.
Yep.
When he was getting in the SUV.
Yep.
Instead of like, duck your head, get in, he puts his foot up on the, you know, the
running board.
The running board. Yep. And like, puts his head up again.
One more time.
Let me give you another shot at me.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Couldn't believe he was looking for his shoes.
Right. I was wondering, he took his shoes off or something? I guess.
He got knocked out of his shoes in the melee.
Yeah. May want to get some tighter fitting shoes.
Well, that's what happens. I've seen, you know, the aftermath of people who've been hit by a car, and they could be in, you know, high boots laced up, and you come out somehow.
Yeah. The force knocks you out.
Force.
Yeah.
You know, for all of the Hollywood movies about the intricate plans to assassinate a president with different layers of people on the inside, on the outside, and this, and then we're going to swipe this, and we're going to lower ourselves on a rope here. All you had to be is a 20-year-old with a gun with no military experience.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. another unbelievable thing.
How do you not secure that one building?
Yeah, it's not a good look.
You guys didn't look? Hey, you know, someone can squeeze up a shot from this building over here.
You know, this is another moment in life where everyone's going to remember exactly where they were when they heard the news. And I couldn't believe it, because it wasn't just that he was shot at. It was that he was hit.
Yeah.
And then he got up and did the fist pump. I'm like, my brain can't calculate this.
Yeah.
And then it's a building 130 yards away. I'm no security person, but come on. Like, we all know.
Yeah.
Like, everybody.
Yeah.
There's no one that you'll walk around with today and say, I could see how that would be overlooked.
Yep.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was one of, like, six structures that were there. There's not a lot out there in that field.
Not for nothing. We've had Secret Service people before, and they check every damn everywhere.
Yeah.
Every angle, everywhere. How did you miss this?
Yeah. Well, we sat across the table from a sitting vice president, and that's the security level there. That was in the Senate Hart building.
Yeah.
This is a building full of senators. They locked that building down. Obama couldn't get, he was a then senator, couldn't get in because we were doing an interview with the vice president. And then another unbelievable layer was, you just expect if there's gunshots, there's going to be this complete show of force, organization, and movement. There was none of that. It was chaos. There was a couple of those agents that looked like Keystone Cops.
Seriously.
And the one, that one female who was first ducking,
right,
then screaming, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do?
Oh.
And then couldn't get her gun in her holster.
Yep.
That's not a great look.
And then the other one with the sunglasses. Now, what's with the sunglasses?
Seriously.
They were all wearing them.
Right.
Like, are you like seeing things in there?
Is there intel coming?
Like, why did you have to put those glasses on at that moment?
Right. We want to look up for photos. Yeah, I had a late night last night. I got bags into my eyes. I want to look good. Yep. And didn't one do, like, jazz hands? One was, like waving their hands up in the air.
No, that could have been a signal to the helicopter or whatever.
They were putting their hands up to protect his head.
Okay.
All right. So, first of all of those agents should be as tall or taller than him. Okay? That's how you shield his body.
Yeah.
You had agents there that were shorter than him.
Way shorter.
Not bright.
No.
No.
Yeah, get on my shoulders, quick.
Here, get on your tippy toes.
Right, right.
So I can protect your head.
I need you to kneel down, sir. I'm not as tall as you. Wow.
And then another level that made it unbelievable were the people behind him. Did you see some of these people? There were just shots fired.
Yeah.
Did you see the woman in white?
No, didn't catch
just
that.
Just waving
one.
Signs.
First, she's standing.
Yeah.
Then she sits down right before the shots, and she puts a sign up. As soon as the shots are fired, she puts her sign down, doesn't change the expression on her face,
right,
and pulls out her phone and just starts recording.
Oh, my God.
This is the oddest. There's too much odd.
Yep. A lot of odd. It was an afternoon
of odd.
There
was a lot of odd.
Yes.
It was a lot of odd.
A lot of odd.
Yeah.
Yep. That was Pennsylvania.
I'm like, man, if I hear shots fire, I see president go down on the ground.
A dog pile of Secret Service agents.
Yeah. I'm not pulling my phone out.
No.
I'm getting down.
Yeah. I mean, they said there was confusion, folks. There was fireworks. But when you see the president go down, people jump on top of him. Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
It's happening.
And then there was another guy behind him who, someone helped me with the name. It's like Ray Fusco or something. He's running for Senate, I think, in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And conspiracy theories, it's one of these weird, like, I dove deep yesterday.
Okay.
He's one of these guys who conspiracy wackos think that he's like JFK Jr.
Oh.
He's running
like
for Senate.
Like in reality.
Yes.
Yes. I know.
Right.
But he's standing behind Trump, and he's the guy with the hat and the beard.
Okay.
You see everyone get down except him.
Right.
He's just standing there looking around.
I have to stand here. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then no one really ran. Very few people ran. Most of those people just stayed in place.
Yeah. I suppose with more chaos, people just scattering.
When he got up and did that fist pump, man, the crowd went bananas. Like, what?
It's kind of like bizarre. It was odd.
It was beyond odd.
Yeah.
It was the most unbelievable thing I had ever witnessed in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm not young. It was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot to take in. A lot to take in.
Man.
And then there were witnesses who were like, hey, you know, there's a guy over there with a gun crawling up on the roof.
Right, military style. Yep.
Yeah, we see him. He's not very well hidden.
No.
We're looking right at him. It's a white roof. Anything of any color on a white roof, we're going to see it.
Right.
By the way, can I just mention, it was a very hot day at 6 o'clock on a metal roof.
That
couldn't have been comfortable.
No.
To crawl on that?
Nope.
Just, I'm just saying.
Yes, exactly, right.
I'm not that committed to anything.
Right.
I can't even touch my table after it's been in the sun for a little while.
I can't touch my keys.
I'm like, yeah.
You want to leave your keys in the hot sun?
I'm good.
Yep.
But how does that 20-year-old know he would make it that far?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't just say, you know, let me just try to get over here and... Let's see what happens.
Take my chances here.
Yeah.
Yeah. See how far I get.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there was a police officer who was alerted by these people.
Yeah.
They're yelling, there's a guy with a gun. They're like, who?
Nope.
And one of the police officers climbed the ladder. I'm assuming it's a ladder affixed to the building.
Yeah.
You know, because it would make it even weirder if this 20-year-old, like, shows up.
A ladder, yeah.
Like
a cartoon.
I have this snake. Right. Hey, officer, can you help me with this ladder?
Right. Takes it off the roof of his car first.
I'm just going up there to paint.
Right. That guy's ladder.
Well, you don't have any brushes.
Right.
I'm going to get them later.
Right.
Let's just put it up on the building.
Right.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's just a ladder that's affixed to the building.
HVAC.
And this is a report, so I don't know if it's true or not, but they said the cop went up the ladder. Poked his head over the roof, saw the shooter. The shooter looked down, pointed his rifle at him, and the cop went, doo, 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 doo,
right
back down.
Okay, I see you're busy right now.
Okay, I can see.
You're busy.
You're in the middle of something.
I'll come back later.
I think I'll come back.
My bad.
Yeah. And I'm sure, in defense of this guy, he like radioed.
Yeah.
What's he going to do? Pull his gun? He'd be shot dead right there.
Seriously, yeah.
But maybe you'd outgunned. Duck down and then come back up
right.
And shoot him. If you watch the video of Trump early in the speech, the sniper team that ultimately ended up taking this guy out.
Yeah.
They weren't even set up when he came out. So you'll see Trump speaking, and then you see him, he's like taking his tripod out.
Right. Right.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Were you late in traffic?
So, what is this then? Like, well, they won't kill him in the beginning. They'll let him talk for a couple minutes.
Right, we got time. Finish your coffee. We're good.
Oh, my God.
Right, you want iced coffee?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I still, after living it for since Saturday, I still can't believe it.
Yeah. So many errors. So many.
That's your job.
Yeah. You kind of have to have this stuff locked down.
I mean, we would have done a better job.
Yeah.
We know nothing about this. You could have put me on the detail to secure that area.
Right.
I would have done a better job.
Yeah, that roof there right there could be secured.
But I think if not for those witnesses yelling, he's got a gun.
Yeah.
And those are people who couldn't get in. They were outside listening to the rally.
Yeah.
So they were able to see him. And if not for them yelling, he's got a gun, and that cop going up, rushing this shooter into.
Yep.
Oh, got to go.
Exactly.
It's go time.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't have missed because it's a, you know, every sniper has said, you know, easy shot.
Different outcome, yeah.
Different outcome. James in Wallingford.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I just want to mention about the shooter. That one who was on a metal roof, but he had shorts on. These kids these days don't think.
Right. Did he have shorts on?
Yeah, I haven't seen him like go from like waist down, just to waist up.
That had to be so hot.
Yeah.
Because I go up in attics every day, and I touch the sheet metal, and that stuff is hot.
Yeah.
No, that was a hot roof.
Yeah, with direct sunlight, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Yep. All day.
It's just unbelievable. Hey, you guys rule. I'm glad to have you back this week.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I don't know if you had shorts on.
Definitely had short sleeves on, so his arms are exposed.
You know, people have made a lot of comments about the sniper on the roof, the police sniper.
Uh-huh.
They're saying it was Secret Service, but they had some local cops as anti-sniper units on the roofs. He was looking through his lens. Then he picked his head up, looked over, and then looked back through the lens and didn't fire. And I think that's because That could be a friendly. You look over and you're like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, this is a small town, clearly unorganized event.
Right.
And you look over there, you're like, I can't just shoot somebody.
Right.
I don't know if that's a cop.
I got to be certain, yeah.
Yeah. Brain.
Morning.
Hey.
Morning.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, on the news this morning, they said that that kid failed shooting class, and they were worried about him in school.
That shooting class was a while ago, right?
Yeah.
That was, it wasn't like last month.
No.
Yeah.
No. You know, but that's what they were saying on the news this morning about him and stuff like that.
Right. You know, just keep in mind some of what we hear, maybe not accurate, but.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep. Everybody's going to try to get their story in.
Yeah, all completely right. Unbelievable.
I hear you.
Former Secret Service agent Joe Russo on the show now. Good morning, and thank you for your service to our country.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Why don't you take us through what you saw Saturday and give us your thoughts?
Well, certainly been a whirlwind of a weekend. It's obviously very disturbing to all of us, and we certainly don't want to see ever anything like that in our country. But, you know, it was a typical outdoor rally. Former President Trump obviously generates large crowds. And, you know, from a Secret Service perspective, outdoor rallies are always and have always been and will always be a security challenge. That being said, you know, it appeared from everything we're seeing so far and from the news so far, and of course, we're going to get a lot more information from the ongoing investigation, both by the FBI and internally by the Secret Service. But, you know, it was a magnetometer event, which means everybody who is entering the inner perimeter of that event would have to go through a magnetometer for metal screening. So it would be highly unlikely any weapon would be able to breach that particular security. Those magnetometers are managed and operated by the Uniform Secret Service Division.
Who goes through that? And that's the attendees and the media?
Attendees, media, anybody entering inside that fence line.
Okay,
gotcha.
So that's internally. So immediately, you know, my thoughts were that it would be highly unlikely the shooter, if it was a shooter, as a matter of fact, you know, in the beginning, we weren't even clear on that, would have been inside the fence line. And when it became clear that that was the case, and obviously as the weekend progressed, we found out all the facts that it was a rooftop nearby. It's glaring from a Secret Service perspective because we always, for all the years that I was there, for 20 years that I was there, always covered high ground, especially when you have a Secret Service counter-sniper component, which obviously they did here. So during that advance, the counter-sniper advance, they're on the ground a few days before, much like the entire advance team putting together the event, their specific duties are to recognize any high ground vulnerability within the area. And
what is the area? So how far back would you go?
Well, you know, depending on the environment, like, you know, it's different when you're doing an event in New York City outside, obviously, with surrounded by skyscrapers, as compared to this event, which what we see on the map, and again, we're not there, is very few buildings of concern. So in this particular case, it would have been, you know, it's usually any building where a sniper can consider a point to have a line of sight to the protectee, and obviously distance is always a factor. But here in this particular case, did not appear to be a lot of buildings of concerns. As a matter of fact, this appears to be one of the few buildings of concern. So
weird normally, that it wasn't covered, right?
Seriously.
Yeah. So normally what happens, and I would imagine it's going to come out that this was the case, that they did identify that building. They made sure the building was shut down. And normally what happens is they designate either Secret Service or local law enforcement, someone to cover the building. And normally that means making sure nobody has any access to the building to get to the roof. And sometimes if it's a high enough building, in this case, it did not look to be that high of a building, they'll put a uniform presence on the roof so that the snipers see the uniform and know that that is law enforcement. You don't want to put, obviously, a plainclothes person up there. In this case, you know, maybe they identified it. Maybe they designated local law enforcement or Secret Service post standers to secure the building. And somewhere along the line, something happened where obviously that was not the case. And it allowed, you know, obviously a 20-year-old kid with a long rifle.
No military experience.
No, who was actually seen by many people, apparently, able to access that building. We're going to find out how he actually got up there.
That's got to be mind-blowing for you, right?
Yeah, it is difficult because, you know, it's 150 yards away from the protectee.
Which is not a difficult shot.
No.
No, it's unheard of. So it's very disturbing for me and, of course, anybody else in former active Secret Service. But it's alarming, and I just think we need to wait for the facts to come out to
right.
see exactly where the miscommunication was. Look, the response on the ground, protect to cover and evacuate former President Trump, and the counter-sniper response to take out the attempted assassin.
Let me ask you about that. Joe Russo's on, former Secret Service agent. So if you see video of the president speaking early in the speech, the counter-sniper is just setting up his tripod, hasn't even pulled out his rifle yet. Isn't that weird?
You know, I did not see that particular one, but you also have to understand from what I'm hearing from the news reports, and makes sense, there were four counter-sniper teams. So when you hear of four counter-sniper teams at any event, that usually consists of two Secret Service teams and two local law enforcement teams, whether it's state or local police, that are also trained. So you did not see the perches of the other three, at least I haven't. So you're not really quite clear on, number one,
gotcha.
Whose responsibility that particular roof even was and where they were others were set up. Obviously, it's always a strategic setup so that they can cover a 360. So, you know, you didn't see or hear about where they were. We will, but we don't know just yet.
Is there ever a scenario where they may try to actually, you know, capture the sniper alive?
Good question.
To get information from him.
Not if he's shooting.
I don't know if they could just like wing him or something like that.
If he's shooting into the crowd, like, it's like, we got to kill you.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, curious.
No, it has. Look, it obviously it's never really happened before, but it has to be, you know, it has to be a kill shot because obviously, you know, he got off eight rounds to start with is what I hear. So
yeah.
That's the other thing. There's so many things, Joe, that just regular people like us, we all couldn't figure out. One was, how is this building not covered?
Yeah.
How does this guy, 20-year-old, no military experience, just walk onto this property, climb up the ladder, get up on the roof, and then fire eight shots?
Right. Yep. And we're going to find out the timeline on that and when they recognize that, and just by the communication on the radio. Because when you have a counter-sniper component, a Secret Service counter-sniper component at an event, on the ground they have what's called a counter-sniper response team, a CS response team. And so if the snipers, counter-snipers, are observing high buildings, and in this case it's only one, but in normal cases it's many more, and they see something of concern to them, an open window, people milling on the roof of a building, it probably just spectators, but you don't know, their immediate communication is to the on-ground counter-sniper response team. And that usually consists of a Secret Service agent and local law enforcement to say, hey, this is the address of the building, because they've surveyed them. They know what the addresses are. We need somebody to get up to the fifth floor of this building. We got an open window. Or we have people up on the roof. Somebody needs to respond. And normally what happens is the counter-sniper response team has the time to do that. In this case, obviously, you wouldn't have had the time. So there's several pieces to not only the advance, but actually the implementation when you have a counter-sniper, Secret Service counter-sniper element at any event.
Did you see the sniper that was on the barn kind of look up over? He was looking through the glass, and then he looked up over his scope and then looked back down. And what was what was your take on that?
So normally when you have a two-person, two-man element, you have one who's an observer and one who is the shooter at that moment. Obviously, they both have to be on their guns. So they use their scope to observe. So that particular Secret Service officer. Again, that's Uniform Division Secret Service who provides that service. They're not agents, but they're the best in the world. I've worked with them many, many years. They are the best marksmen and extremely professional. Many of them have military experience. So one is an observer, and one is the shooter at that moment. So that one there, you probably, and this is my assumption, he was the observer, and he was looking through his scope at the particular threat at that moment, which was obviously the shooter up on the roof. He wasn't going to be the one to pull the trigger. From what I saw and from what I understand, it was obviously the one laying down in the shooting position.
Gotcha.
What about the use of, like, drone surveillance? They use drone surveillance at all?
They do. Now, I don't know. Former President Trump right now is under the candidate nominee protection implementation and source. So what happens is the Secret Service has a certain level of protection, and when a candidate is out there, obviously President Trump is the primary candidate for the Republican Party, he gets extra layers of security. And anybody else, you know, in a normal campaign, as you guys know, there's two or three or four of them at this time of year that are out there. So it's a lot for the Secret Service, but they do give the extra levels. I don't know, because obviously when I was in the Secret Service, there were no drones, but I don't know what the level is that would have them the capability of a drone in this particular case. Look, I didn't see any out there. We haven't heard of any out there. And really, if you look at that environment, you really would not require a drone because the ground is not that high. You can pretty much observe everything around there.
They took care of that one roof. They would have been fine. Yeah.
Right. And actually, sometimes you would think when you look at it, that might have even been the roof that they chose to be on. But again, there's four teams, so I'm not exactly sure where the others were.
Right.
Obviously not on that roof. But it does not appear to be a lot of options there for high ground coverage.
Former Secret Service agent Joe Russo on. You know, I remember watching Obama give speeches as a candidate, and he was covered in glass walls.
Right.
Like, is that something that, you know, if the Secret Service says, hey, we need a glass wall here, the candidate could say, I don't want it?
Most likely not. Now, in this particular case, outdoor rally, yes, I do remember President Obama, I think it was on the mall in Washington, had the glass.
No, but so as a candidate, and I understand, yeah, you know, the first African-American running and probably going to win the presidency, you do not want. You don't want that for anybody,
no.
But certainly,
yeah,
you know.
But I would imagine if we look back while when he was not the president, he was running, he did not get full glass. Full glass is very unusual.
Oh, okay.
For a sitting president, yes. Now, if you look at that platform that former President Trump was on, you'll see on the riser in front of him is probably a 2 or 3 foot barrier, which is covered in a banner or whatever it was covered
in.
That's usually a ballistic shield. And so when he goes down and when the Secret Service covers him down, that's usually a ballistic piece of steel there. I don't know if that was the case here. But you have to understand, they have to move that around. They have to set it up. They have to bring it. And when you have a lot of outdoor rallies and a lot of things taking place, there's a lot of moving parts. I don't know if that was the case there. I am assuming it was.
What was your reaction to, all right, so we get past the, should have been a guy on the roof and miscommunications and guy got off 8 shots. And what was your reaction to what you saw on stage as the bullets started to fly?
Yeah, so look, I think both the reaction and the response of the agents on the ground who covered and eventually evacuated him was textbook. And certainly, you know, the counter sniper response of the shot and taking out the sniper was extremely effective as well. But, you know, an outdoor rally always presents very unique sets of challenges. Number one, you're up on a riser, so you have steps to deal with to get down. Number two, your closest cover is going to be, in most cases, your limousine, which is a bulletproof armored vehicle. You could see in this particular case, by the time they had to evacuate him, they had to take him down the stairs, and they had to walk through right in front of a crowd to get to the truck, which was the closest point that they can put that. So a lot of times, you know, you're subject to whatever the setup is. Now, you do have, as a Secret Service agent advance person, you do have some say. If you think that it's going to be too far for you to have that vehicle, then you could tell them, look, we need to take certain things down here. We need to get this closer. But anytime you have an outdoor event like that, where you have a riser, a platform that's up on stairs, you know, it's always going to be a difficult challenge to evacuate the protectee. So they did cover him. They did make sure, obviously, the communication came in that the shooter was down. That doesn't necessarily mean there's not others.
I saw two different uniforms on the stage. One black, looked like riot gear,
right,
and then the other looked military.
Yeah.
Are those two different forces? Are they both Secret Service? What was that?
So what you have on the ground, other than the counter snipers, is the Secret Service has a counter assault team, so like their SWAT team. And then the local police department, whether it's state or local, will also have their own SWAT team there. And what I saw was, I think the first person who came up in tactical gear, to me, did not look like a Secret Service counter assault agent. Those are agents. I think that was the local law enforcement SWAT team.
Gotcha.
And then the counter-assault team you saw, because they have to help with the cover and evacuation. So, yeah, what you'll see there is a SWAT component, both provided by local and also the counter-assault team, the CAT team, provided by the Secret Service.
And when they got the president up and he said, I want my shoes.
Yeah.
Like, what is the protocol there? You don't say, okay, let's get your shoes and let's do this fist pump, right? They should have just dragged him right off.
Well, I mean, look, it's obviously every situation is different, and you know, you're reacting to something that normally, you know, you would never have to react to, but you are trained to do that. Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen during that time. Let me get my shoes in. You know, I don't know.
Let him put his shoes on.
Right.
Isn't that a weird thing? You just got, you know, sideswiped by a bullet, and you're like, I want to put my shoes on.
Where's my shoes? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, you're in shock, right? And you're probably, you know, you're not thinking clearly, and
right,
you're thinking, okay, you're looking down at your feet, and you realize you've got to walk. So, and you know, he has the image, and you know, that's probably what he was thinking as well. But again, he was in complete shock when he was doing all that, and you know, the agents were just trying to make sure they got him down there safely. And also, you have to understand, while you can see evidently that his ear was hit, you don't know if he's hit somewhere else.
Right.
You know, just like Ronald Reagan.
Like Reagan,
in the limo. They didn't know that he was hit, but Jerry Parr, the agent in charge, who's an American hero, was an American hero, he immediately ordered them to go to the hospital. So, yeah, you don't know when you're moving him, you know, exactly what else could possibly be injured on him.
Former Secret Service agent Joe Russo on. Some of the agents looked like they were confused and shocked and didn't know what to do. Is this like umpiring? Will they now not be allowed to do presidential detail? Do they get knocked down to a lower level? What happens
retraining
in that situation?
No, I mean, look, from what I saw, I didn't really see any real I mean, obviously there's confusion because, you know, you're on top of a former president running for president and, you know, shots were fired. So, yeah, you train for that and you run through, you know, many, many times, not only during your training, but, you know, you get retrained all the time doing those AOPs, they call them assault on principles. So, you know, that's just a reaction. But from what I saw, they did a fantastic job of getting him out of an environment, which is always challenging, down to the truck while he was doing what he was doing. So, no, they'll certainly review that, and they'll go over every reaction of every agent there. But I thought that they did an outstanding job of especially under the circumstances of covering and evacuating him, which is exactly what you're trained to do. But yes, of course, they will look at that like the Secret Service always does at any incident and make sure that, you know, people understand exactly what it is their responsibility was and how they reacted and how they should have reacted.
What about the height of the agents? It seems like I would want a bunch of tall people around a
tall
president.
Yeah, very tall.
And there were a few agents who weren't quite as tall as Trump. What do you think about that?
Yeah, we've never, ever had, you know, people selected by their height.
Interesting.
Certainly, they have to be in good shape, but never selected by the height.
Remember,
the best agents I ever worked with were short guys. So
remember,
yeah, no, it's not. I understand what you're saying because, you know, you see him stand up and nobody's really that tall. But
yeah,
no, there is no selection process for the protection details. Now, you got to understand, in this particular case, former President Trump has lifetime Secret Service protection, which means his primary detail agents are with him all the time. Now, as he's running for president, they've obviously extended that detail to make it bigger. For example, when I had former President Clinton and I was the special agent in charge, I had a very small detail, you know, maybe three or four people with me.
Wow.
So
that doesn't seem like enough, seriously.
There was many more. Well, when you go to certain sites, you know, like this, you have additional agents from the local offices that are helping support you, as well as other poststanders out in the crowd and at other places, which, you know, you just don't see there. So, yeah, those particular agents are very familiar with him, and he's very familiar with them.
One of the guys that traveled with President Clinton had hair just like him, and I thought, oh, this is the decoy.
Yeah. The lookalike.
Who was that guy?
You guys mentioned that the last time I think we spoke. So that was David Carpenter, who was the president's special agent in charge while he was the president, President Clinton I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Back during the first term, I think 92 to 95, 96. That's when I was down there with Vice President Gore, actually.
Wow.
That was Dave Carpenter. Yeah, and everybody used to joke that, you know, they had the same hair. And sometimes they would say, let's put him in the back of the limo and put President Clinton in the other one.
Right. Why not just dress everybody like the president?
Well, I remember because they don't allow presidents to drive, and they let President Clinton drive a convertible Mustang.
Yeah.
And sitting right next to him was that guy.
Yep.
I'm like, I don't want to be that guy.
That was the parade vehicle they used, I think, when he was the governor of Arkansas. So when they sent that up to New York or actually to D.C. at that time, he asked Dave if he could drive it. I think it was just on the grounds of the White House there. But, Carpenter was in the front seat with him. I remember that.
That's funny.
Wow.
Well, unbelievable. And we'll look forward to hearing what this investigation turns up.
Yeah.
Just so many layers of things that were unbelievable.
Yep.
Yep, no, I agree, and I think we all need to be patient to see the results of the investigation. And again, it'll be an investigation on several fronts. Obviously, you know, Congress is going to be calling the director up on the Hill. She's the second female director of the Secret Service in history, Kim Cheadle. She's fantastic. And you're going to have the FBI, which are designated in any assassination attempt, which most people don't realize, to be the primary in the investigation. The Secret Service is not.
Yeah, because that'd be weird if they were investigating their own shortcomings.
That's right.
Or possible
That's
shortcomings.
Right. Yep.
Well,
of course.
Again,
of course.
Thank you for your service to the country. Thanks for coming on. We always love talking to you, Joe.
All right, Chaz, AJ, I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, brother. Former FBI Special Agent Ken Gray on the show now. Good morning, and thank you for your service.
Good morning, AJ. Good morning, Chaz.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Just bring us through your take on what you saw.
So this was an incredible event, as you said, and is shocking in so many different levels. Secret Service is the lead federal agency responsible for the protection of the president, the vice president, foreign officials, and presidential candidates. In this particular case, former President Trump was speaking at a rally. Secret Service had set up security for this rally event. It was an outdoor event. Outdoor events, by their very nature, are less secure than indoor events where you can control the entire environment. For this outdoor event, Secret Service had three tiers of security: the inner perimeter, a middle perimeter that surrounded that area and included the building on which the shooter was on, and then the far perimeter, which is all the outlying areas. The Secret Service did not have enough personnel there to be able to cover all three areas of security. And consequently, they were relying upon assistance by the local and state police to help augment their security detail. The flaw in this case was that the shooter was able to get into the middle perimeter, the middle security area, get up on top of a building within that, only 150 meters away, 150 yards up, 1.5 football fields away from the stage area at this rally, crawl across the top of a building, get into position, and shoot at former President Trump. President Trump turned his head just at the right moment, and instead of hitting him in the head on the behind his ear, instead, it grazed his ear, tearing his ear, but missing hitting the main part of his head. Had he not turned his head when he did, we would be having a completely different conversation.
I watched that video so many times. I saw, you know, there's charts and graphs of the bullet trajectory and his head and tilted. And if he was, you know, facing the crowd,
right,
then he tilted. It's truly unbelievable. And if you think of all the things that happened in the split second before the shooting, the police officer climbs the ladder, confronts the shooter. Shooter points the gun at him. Police officer climbs back down. Now the shooter feels rushed. So because of those people yelling, he's got a gun, the cop goes up, confronts him. If he had a little bit more time to settle in.
Yeah.
And then
he'd be gone.
And then Trump turning his head.
Yep.
Really?
Luck was on his side big time.
Really unbelievable.
Yeah. Simple movement saved his life.
Yep.
What do you think about
The Butler sheriff said that instead of climbing the ladder, that the officer was boosted up by another officer, and he grabbed hold of the rooftop with his fingertips, pulled himself up enough to look onto the top of the building, at which time the shooter turned towards him with the weapon, and because he had both his hands holding onto the edge of the building, he dropped. He let go of the building, and he went back down to the ground. And that's the time in which the shooter turned back and started delivering his rounds. So because the officer was being boosted up like that, he was not able to reach his weapon, and he was not able to engage the shooter.
Even if he went for his weapon,
yeah,
he would have been killed in that moment.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But the security flaw did not happen at the event. The security flaw happened in the preparation for this rally, in which during the advance work, they should have identified this as an area of a threat and had somebody stationed on top of that building, or made sure that nobody could get to those buildings, had cleared those buildings beforehand and had enough personnel in that area to deny them access to these buildings. So the breakdown in security occurred before the event even happened. Then there was the action up on the stage after the shots rang out. Secret Service got President Trump went to the ground himself. Secret Service piled on top of him. They then took a long time getting him off that stage into the vehicle and out of the area. Secret Service's task in that case is to get the president or the presidential candidate out of the area. Not returning fire, not protecting them there, getting him up, getting him out, and getting him into the vehicle and getting him away from danger, because there may have been other shooters in the area. There wasn't, but there could have been. And so by delaying and getting them out of there, they presented the opportunity for additional rounds to come in were there to be other shooters.
It seems like, and we were just talking to a Secret Service agent in the last hour, and we'll post that on the radio station website. It was really incredible.
Yeah.
But it seems like they were just giving him a human shield until they knew that the shooter was taken down.
So the agents that were piled up on top of them were using their bodies as a human shield.
Right.
They have on armor, but that armor may not stop high-powered rifle rounds.
Wow.
All right. And so
incredibly brave.
That was very brave. That's what their job is
right,
to in that type of event, to put themselves between the shooter and the candidate or the president, using their body as a shield for that. But the better thing to do would have been to immediately get him up and get him off the stage. Now, that photo op that he did, that is raising his fist up the way he did and leading a chant while being gathered together, getting ready to escort him out, that was a wonderful photo op for him. But that being said, it exposed him to more risk.
Yeah.
The better thing to do would have been said, screw the shoes, when he said, I got to get my shoes.
Yeah.
Screw the shoes. Carry them off the stage and got them into that vehicle and got out of there.
Yeah, and duck.
Yep.
So duck. We were talking about this. There's no comedy in it, but, you know, if you ever watch a cartoon and, like, someone throws a snowball at you.
Yep.
And you duck and you say, miss me, and then you take a snowball to the face.
Right.
That could have been that moment.
It's true.
Especially if there were a second shooter.
Right.
Yep. If there were a second shooter, there wasn't. But had there been a second shooter, he was very vulnerable to additional fire.
So you're former FBI. What happens now? So, you know, they've swarmed this guy's house. They grab his computer. They grab his phone. They couldn't get into his phone as of yesterday. What happens?
So the FBI is doing a couple of things in this investigation. One thing that they're doing is collecting up the forensic evidence. They are collecting up they've conducted a search warrant at his residence. They are searching through his house for things that would link him to the shooting. They're interviewing family members. They're interviewing friends. They're interviewing colleagues. Collecting up his computer, if he has a computer. They've got his phone. They're going to do a forensic, a digital forensic examination, if they can get into the phone, and try to see if there is any postings by him, any indication of what his motivation was, why he was doing this. They'll also be doing interviews of neighbors, of colleagues, trying to figure out who this person is. So far, this is a 20-year-old male, white, worked at a nursing facility in Bethel Park as a dietary aide. Graduated high school 2 years ago. It does not appear to have any close friends. Was kind of a loner in school and kind of bullied in school. We don't know, though, what his motivation was so far. Apparently, he had an account on Discord server, and so that's the only social media that they found so far, to my understanding. But all this is part of the investigation of the shooter and the shooting. But then there's a second part of the investigation, and that is the security planning and the actions of Secret Service, because – and the big picture idea is what happened at this, and that includes the security planning and the response by Secret Service. So the FBI is not just concentrating on the event. They're also concentrating in on the entire picture to include the security detail. Now, in addition to the federal aspect, there was also the murdered rally attendee. Pennsylvania State Police are involved in the investigation. They're working with the FBI. They are concentrating in on their investigation about the murder and also the shooting of the two other attendees. Again, no prosecution is possible because the shooter is dead.
Yeah, right. Well, if he acted alone, which he probably did,
yeah,
right?
I don't know.
Right.
What?
They need to get into a social media. That's why they need to see whether or not he was talking about this with anyone, to see if anyone else was either encouraging him, supporting him, planning with him, or maybe even acting with him. So far, all the indications are this is a lone wolf, a person who was acting on their own. But, that's what the investigation is for.
I don't know what's scarier. If he did this by himself and like a 20-year-old with no military training
right.
can breach security, get on a roof, fire 8 shots before he's taken out. If someone with no military experience can pull that off.
Right.
Or if he was working with someone who explained to him or taught him
what
to do. Yeah.
That is why the security planning was flawed. That is why this was a total failure in the security detail, that somebody without any real experience, without any real training, was able to carry this out. But when you look at historically previous attacks or attempts, John Hinckley, was trying to impress Jodie Foster, and he managed to shoot Ronald Reagan. Squeaky Fromm, part of that whole crazy group there, she manages to get a gun and almost shoots President Ford. You go back to JFK and RFK. It doesn't take.
What is your take on the JFK?
To do this.
What is your take on the JFK assassination?
I've been listening to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talk about this. And his view is that it was not
an inside job
doing this.
Yeah.
He thinks it was an inside job. I'd like to see the release of those documents so that the public can see exactly what happened. There was an investigation at the time, but was it an investigation or a cover up? We won't Seems know like more like a cover up. Full documents.
At the end of the investigation, they said, we're just going to lock up these documents for 50 years. And then they relocked them up after 50 years. Like, we're going to just relock them up.
Right, totally forget about it. Yes.
Something's going on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the difference between what happened Saturday and what happened in 1963 is everyone has a cell phone now.
Yep.
So, you know, you really can't hide if there's two shooters, one shooter.
Eyes everywhere now.
Eyes everywhere, yeah. Was there anything, Ken, that your FBI mind saw in the various footage that you thought that seems weird?
So the big question in my mind is the counter sniper team. So Secret Service has three different groups there. They have the agents that were up that responded on the stage that piled on top of President Trump. They had the CAT team, a counter assault team, which were the guys that hopped up onto the stage with the long guns and the green jumpsuits and the helmets. Their job is to provide suppression fire in case there is an attack going on, and they're providing the heavy fire for that. And then there's the counter sniper team. Counter sniper team are Secret Service employees. They're not agents, but they are usually former military snipers. They had the counter sniper teams that were at a high position providing overwatch. The big question in my mind is that here's the shooter on top of the roof. The counter sniper team should have been able to see him. They should have been able to shoot and take him out before he fired. Now, they may have been engaged in looking at the outer perimeter and did not see him, or they may have seen him and were waiting for orders to take him out.
Would you have to get orders?
No, he actually fired.
Would you have to get orders to? Because I heard some media talking about, you know, the head of the Secret Service didn't give the okay.
Right.
That's why it took so long. And I thought to myself, if there's an active shooter, I don't think you have to get permission.
No, just fire.
Someone said, and I thought made a good point, that it could have been a friendly.
It depends on what their rules of engagement are. I don't know what their rules of engagement are. I know the FBI operates under a deadly force policy. I don't know if the counter snipers in this case have to operate under deadly policy, a deadly force policy, which would mean there has to be a threat to themselves or to another individual, which the President Trump was clearly under a threat of this. But nonetheless, I think the investigation will focus in on what they did and why it took them so long to engage the shooter. They may not have seen him. I don't know. That's what the investigation's for.
Which was worse, in your mind, the Secret Service protection in 1963 or Saturday?
Well, of course, the outcome is completely different.
Yes.
And so from that aspect, of course, 1963 is far worse because it killed a president. It killed a young, popular president.
No, but I mean in terms of breakdown of Secret Service protection, like if you're the Secret Service, are you more embarrassed about 63? Like, was there more that they could have done other than order the president to drive in a car with a glass bubble?
Yeah.
What else could they have done?
That would have been a major difference is being in an open car like that, driving down
through a city.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as bad as that was, they did it. I think they personally, I don't know, but I think they screwed up more Saturday than they did on this one. If you have a president driving in an open convertible through a city, there's not a lot you can do. You can't go into every building, lock every building down.
Exactly.
It was really a dumb move.
Yeah.
And they suggested
more
a bubble,
that,
and Kennedy said no.
More than that, every one of these events creates changes to the security posture, changes to the security planning. And so the event from Saturday not only had the luxury of knowing what the errors were in Dallas and at the event there for Bobby Kennedy, but for the event with President Ford and for the shooting of President Reagan, each one of these adds on to the layers of security that have to be added. And so the event on Saturday had all of that to base their security on, as opposed to President Kennedy, which was a recent shooting that didn't have a whole lot of history there for the Secret Service.
Did it strike you as weird? Did you see the woman in white that was behind the podium?
Yeah.
You mean with her concentrating in with her phone?
Yeah.
The way she was?
Well, first,
while everybody else was ducking, she was filming?
Yes.
Right. You know, people do strange things.
I know. It's so weird.
I would not attribute too much to that. I mean, a lot of people are willing to take big risks to be able to get that photo.
The other thing were some of the interviews. You know, you got people with like goofy Trump sunglasses on,
yeah,
like giving in. It was just a contradiction.
Bizarro world.
And it was bizarro world.
It really was.
Yeah. So, Ken, thanks for...
Those are political rallies.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I know.
Yep.
I know. All right. Ken, thanks for coming on and thanks for your service to the FBI. Scott Sasso lives in Pennsylvania, was at the rally on Saturday. He was not far from the person who was shot and killed.
Wow.
Scott's on the phone. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, guys.
Hey,
morning.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, take us through the day.
Yeah, so my son is just turned 18, and he was really excited about President Trump coming into town, so he wanted to attend the rally, and so we decided that it was really hot that day. And my wife and my other son were going to come, but they decided at the last minute not to come. So we left early. We got there and were able to get a really good spot in the bleachers. The stands right next to, just to, if you're to the right of President Trump there in the stands, and decided that we were going to sit in the upper left-hand corner of the stands. And so after going through the rally, the stands filled up really quick. And
how long did it take you to get through security?
It took us a while, but we had some VIP tickets, passes that we were able to get in. But we were in line for the better part of 6 or 7 hours.
Wow.
Just to get through the process. So, security was pretty tight. So. We had a great vantage point. We were up in the corner. We were able to see everything behind us across the field, where the building was, where the shooter was.
Where was the shooter as compared to where you were? It seems like he was over your right shoulder.
Yeah, he would have been over my right shoulder, a little bit further down. The bullet came across the other side of the grandstands right there. So from his angle, he had the opportunity to see right through the stands to the president. He had a line of sight from there.
Once the gunfire started, did you think it was gunfire or did you think it was firecrackers?
I thought it was firecrackers, which was very odd. I mean, it's just the way it sounded. We were the president directed us up to the board. And he was showing a graph, and I had turned my head, and I was looking. It was right above our heads. And then I immediately started hearing that sound, and I looked to the ground because it sounded like it was right below us. There's just no way they have firecrackers going on at this rally. And things moved very quickly from that point.
So the president goes down. Did you guys duck, or what did you do?
So, again, I was trying to identify where this was coming from. I was looking for some smoke, and then everybody in our section got down. And then about maybe 5 or 7 seconds later, my son grabbed me and said, "You need to get down." And so he pulled me down, and then you would hear a couple more shots. And then eventually I popped my head back up and was looking because we were kind of covered behind. There was a banners, these American style banners that were behind around all the stands. So stuck my head up to look and see what was going on. And then probably about 10 seconds later, after the gunfire stopped, somebody started screaming that someone was shot and, calling for help. And all the representatives that were running for Congress or, running for Senate were right in front of us. So,
Oh, you were in the you were literally in a VIP.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So everybody was like right in front of us. So I wasn't sure if it was there or in our stands. And then I had the doctor who's been on the radio, TV, social media, he was standing right next to me. And he immediately ran over and started administering CPR on the gentleman that was in our stands. So, yeah, that was where we kind of where that all started.
He was already gone, right?
When I spoke to the doctor afterwards, he said as soon as he got there, he started doing chest compressions, and he said, but he wasn't going to make it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So we ended up seeing, not knowing all the stuff that was going on, because you're just trying, you know, you're seeing the president being, you know, covered up over there on the stage, and you're just trying to see what else is going on, knowing that something else is going on over here. And then eventually we saw the president get taken off, and then they grab the guy and carry him off, you know, back to the tents, which was right behind us. So we saw them carrying him off.
The guy who was shot and died.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So we saw that.
Yeah. And I saw the video you sent of that, and it's very dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a lot to take in, and things were, you know, really fluid. Just not necessarily knowing your bearings. You know, I'm not in the Army or in the military, so not familiar with what those sounds might be. And yeah, that was definitely an experience that I don't think is ever going to leave my mind.
No, it won't.
No,
I think we're all going to remember where we were when we heard the news.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is 9/11. So I tried to explain to my son, you know, it's like we all knew where we were at 9/11. And I said, you're going to know where you were on July 13th. And you're not going to forget this. And it's hard to process because, you know, I'm there as a father, you know, and I'm there. If I decided I was going to go stand on the other side of that stand when nobody was in there before they filled up, we had to pick wherever we wanted to go. And I picked that corner. If I picked the other corner, we would have been right there.
Right.
And so, you know, it's hard to process that, to know that this guy came with his family, his wife, his daughter, and he didn't get to go home. So yeah, it was.
And he just turned 50.
Yeah.
Just the whole thing is just. There's so many levels of. I can't believe this. I can't believe that. I can't believe a guy is on the building. I can't believe he got past security. I can't believe Donald Trump turns his head just at the right moment. It just skimmed his ear. I can't believe he asked for his shoes. I can't believe he did the fist pump. How long did it, right after the bullets started firing, how long do you think that whole time took from the time the bullets started to the bullets ended?
I was watching a video last night on social media. It was 22 seconds from the time the first bullet started till the last one came in.
That last one that came in,
I think, was the one from the sniper who was literally 50 feet behind me, right in, on the building rooftop right behind me. So we had been looking over that way. I had a lot of time to be in the stands. And I was looking at all the security points and all the people that were coming in, and that field was a problem because people were coming up to that fence, and the police would say, you need to get out of here. But then as soon as Trump came up and arrived, people just started flooding that side of the field. I mean, it was far away. So there was a fence keeping the people that were in the area where we were. Then there was a big field, and then there was another fence, and these people were coming in from that fence area. So there wasn't really much. There was just a lot of commotion over there, and he was up on that top of that building. I have no clue how he could have gotten a ladder, how he could have gotten a gun up there,
right?
How he could have crawled up there. I have a hard time believing.
So many questions.
There are a lot of questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
Once the shooting started, and then they get the president to duck, and they build the human shield, and then the bullets stopped, how many seconds do you think from the time that last shot was fired to the time the president got up?
It was probably all like under a minute. And again, wasn't really sure what was going on. I was glad to see that he was able to get up, which said, okay, he was okay. And, you know, and then hearing that something was going on right to our side was concerning.
Okay, so that happened right after. So the president gets up and does the fist pump. The crowd goes nuts. Yeah. And then shortly after that, you hear that someone's in distress in the audience, not far from you.
Yeah. And what happened was, you know, nobody ran.
Nobody I ran. Found Everybody that odd. Did.
That was bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody stayed there.
Because, again, I don't really know that everybody knew what was going on. I mean, even as I left, which was a while, as I left, there were people that were just didn't know anything, that anybody was hurt, anybody was killed, anybody was shot. Like, they did not know.
Well,
and so, that's yeah, weird. It was very
the confusion helped them.
Did anyone ask you to leave, or did anyone ask you questions?
No one asked any questions, but yes, they did come in after they cleared out our stands, probably about 8 or 10 minutes after the whole ordeal happened. I mean, that they kept that section where the guy, you know, was killed. They kept that section sort of sectioned off.
Crime scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, and then they said, listen, you guys got to get out of here. And this is, you know, the other thing that I just thought of is I didn't realize really, it took me about a minute to realize what was going on. And it wasn't until a state trooper came and said, everybody down, where I started to like, okay, there's something going on here.
Yeah, this is not good.
Yeah, this is real, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just a lot to process.
How's your son?
You know, he's doing well. And I'm probably having a harder time than he is just because I understand the gravity of the situation. And,
right.
And you know, knowing that we just saw someone that was killed and, you know, basically being part of history, not in a good way.
Not in a good way,
no.
Yeah, not a way that I wanted him to remember. And I was just really excited to get him there. And you know, I decided to take off golf for the day because he really wanted to go, and he had plans to go with other people. And so this was, it was going to be a nice day for us. And that's not really the way that I expected it to end. In fact, yesterday I took him out to go play golf, and there was a shooting range above the golf course, not far from there. And, you know, you hear the shots going out and we're both turning our heads like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Makes you.
You're going to think of that. You're
going to
think
right
of Saturday every time you hear a gunfire.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he'll be good and I'll be good as well. It's just processing it and trying to see what, and explain to him, you know, how this is really not the way to solve issues.
No.
And, you know, there's violence that just does not need to be here in this country when we're having disagreements about politics. There's so many more things that we have to worry about. That's not it.
Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, man, glad you and your boy are okay. But man, that was just really incredible day.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. A former sniper, Scott Palumbo, CEO of Securitech Consulting, and a retired U.S. Marshal Service Special Operations Group sniper team member. Good morning. Thank you for your service to the country, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good. Still shocked.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I just, since Saturday afternoon, I don't think I've had more than 20 minutes other than going to sleep, being glued to this television and or the radio, watching every shred of what's been happening here. I just cannot believe what has gone on here. I mean, what an epic failure as far as the determination, the decisions that were made by the current command staff of Secret Service in not having those outer perimeter buildings, that area, completely sterilized and protected. I mean, we're only talking maximum distance 150 yards or so. I cannot believe that there has not been some type of aerial support, drone support.
What's the longest shot that you've made as a sniper?
Like, in training.
In training,
2,245 yards. That's 1.3 miles. That was
it's crazy.
Damn, what kind of gun you use for that?
Oh, my God.
That was back when I had the opportunity to attend SODIC, which is a Special Operations Command school. We did this in Arco, Idaho, 2005. That was with a Shytec 416. I had my TAC-50, which is a 50 caliber. There are a number of snipers in Special Operations Group that had been designated as 50 cal snipers. I was one of those. So making an 1,800-yard shot all day was virtually easy after getting out to 2,245 yards with the Shytec. Now, granted, that shot was with the assistance of a ballistic computer, but those distances are achievable with the tech, with that technology.
Tell us about the shot that skimmed President Trump's head. What do you think about all of that?
Well, I think by the grace of God, this man is alive today. And aside from that, I think that's coupled with the fact that it's the grace of God that the would-be assassin was probably the worst marksman on the planet.
Startled. He was startled right before he started shooting. A local police officer was lifted up and engaged him. He turned around, pointed his rifle at the local police officer. Police officer backed off, and then he started shooting. So it sounds like he was kind of rushed, and that plays into it, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. If you are not in a rock-solid position where you are focused on that target and all of those, you know, marksmanship fundamentals come in play. But then again, from the footage that I've seen, the photos I've seen, right in back of the stage where the two counter sniper teams were, in conjunction to where the shooter was on that roof, one distance was 75 yards. The other was 125 yards. I mean, we actually train in confidence courses with a pistol at 125 yards. So the fact that this is the easiest shot, I could teach someone how to make that shot in probably 3 days of training and wow, be able to be hitting a quarter-sized group, which in the industry we refer to minute of angle, 1 inch at 100 yards, 2 inches at 200, 3 inches at 300, and so forth.
That head turn right before the shot was fired.
Saved his life. Had that not been the case, and what has been playing over and over in my mind is the fact that, thank God, this man turned his head at a split second when he had God's hand on him to do that. If this guy last minute on that roof just decided to say, I'm not comfortable with this, I'm going to reduce my error margin, and decided for a body shot, we would have been having a very, very different conversation today. Because from that distance, the 75 yards versus 125 yards, if there's any type of a scope adjustment in elevation, which is up and down, windage, which is left and right, you're talking a minuscule amount of adjustment the size of a shirt button.
Wow.
So if he decided to do a body shot, that's a moot point. And the fact that he was on an AR-15 platform delivering 5.56 rounds, that's the whole idea behind a semi-automatic rifle, is to deliver multiple fast follow-up accurate shots. That's why there was some confusion, I believe, when people started hearing pop, 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 as opposed to the bang, 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 because it still yet has not been confirmed, but that was supposedly a suppressed weapon that the shooter had. Now, that has not come out as fact yet, but all the reports I'm hearing, it was a suppressed weapon. That's why people just did not realize what was going on.
Yeah, so take us through the bullets that you heard. The first, how does the shooter get 8 shots off before the counter-sniper team fires?
Well, a big part of that is because the weapon system that he's using, a semi-automatic, as fast as you can pull the trigger is as fast as that weapon is going to fire. bolt action rifle, it takes a lot more. You actually have to lift the bolt, pull it back, which ejects an empty casing, pushes it forward, strips around off a magazine, chambers that, pushes the bolt down, realign your sight picture.
Then you have to start all over again. Yeah, aiming.
Everything is from the beginning, as opposed to having that crosshairs, that front sight, that red dot on a target, never blinking, and you could probably punch out 10, 15 rounds, no problem. Wow. That fast, accurately.
Okay, so you don't have a problem with the response of the counter snipers.
My only concern with them is the role of a sniper counter sniper team is, number one, observe and relay real time intelligence to command. General observation is a responsibility that this team shares. You're a shooter, you're an observer, you're a shooter. Sniper, observer, observer, sniper, you're both trained to do the same exact thing. And usually, in how I've operated in that capacity for about 25 years now, is that there's about a 15 to 20 minute rollover where you're basically giving each other a break. Relax the eye fatigue, take a little breath, just have a little bit of downtime before you get back on in that position as a shooter. So both those guys are trained to do the same job, but they're also to deliver surgical precision fire, either self-initiated or on command. But the big part of this is you had two-man sniper teams on opposing roofs that were literally both behind former President Trump. So why did these guys not see? And I'm sorry to Monday morning quarterback, these four snipers, but how could you not see from 75 to 125 yards away at maximum distance somebody climbing on a roof that's a light beige roof, white top, in camo pants, getting on this roof, laying in a prone position? It took spectators on the ground to bring that to the attention to law enforcement before it was actually known. And that is at that point is when, shots rang out. So these guys did not, I'm sorry, but these guys did not see the shooter get up on that roof.
Wow.
Now, I had been given some photos, some aerial footage, again, since Saturday afternoon till right now. A tremendous amount of information has been sent to me, shared with me, videos, aerial photographs. I saw the building that the shooter was on top of. And again, it's this glass plastic manufacturing company. The entire perimeter of that building, and again, there was no security. It was not a sterile building, and it was only 125 yards out. There was so many things around that building that built up. There was a dumpster. There were 55-gallon drums. There were pallets. There was a portion of a generator, which the only thing missing was an escalator to get this guy on the roof.
Seriously.
Him getting up there was so easy. Oh. And then, again, you're on a white roof in camo pants. This guy made no attempt to discreet himself. I'm sorry, to get in such a position where he would have just, blend into the background. Yes, my apologies. Yes, couldn't think of the word. But that's exactly what he did. And if it wasn't for the people that saw him up there and made notification to anyone else, again, my understanding is he had three 30-round magazines with him. So that's 90. That's 90 rounds of 5.56 ammunition.
Wow. I do think that the people who saw him and started yelling actually saved Donald Trump's life.
Yeah.
Because that got law enforcement to go up in whole chain of events where they confronted him.
And they made him turn his head.
Made him turn his head, turn his rifle. And then now he knew it was on.
Yeah.
Like, I have to go now. Do you think the wind played any? I know he turned his head, but do you think the wind played any part of it?
Not at that distance. In my opinion, not at that distance. It certainly does at further distances. Because, for example, he was using a 5.56 round. So a 5.56 round is in essence a .22 caliber bullet in a rifle cartridge. Now, what makes that so devastating is that that round is traveling at approximately 2,500 to 3,200 feet per second. The kinetic energy on a round like that is 1,300 foot-pounds of energy per square inch. So when you take that versus a .308 normal sniper round, which is about 2,500 feet per second, kinetic energy 2,600, what makes that smaller round so devastating is it's so fast that when that enters the body, it's literally playing pinball with your bones.
Man.
So it doesn't go straight through?
It could. It could, but because it's so light and it's so fast, and depending, again, on the type of bullet it is, like if you had a full metal jacket, yes, that's something that's just going to keep going and going and going. That's basically a training round, a full metal jacket round. But when you get into defense ammunition, law enforcement ammunition, and I'm not sure what the type of round was that the shooter fired, but if it was a jacketed hollow point, that is designed to not over-penetrate. It will deliver in what's called terminal ballistics. Its final resting place will do maximum damage with that kinetic energy on that body tissue.
Yeah, the hollow point turns into just a mass of metal and just stays, is designed to do as much internal damage as possible,
yeah.
Correct?
Without over-penetration, correct.
Right.
So just as a security guy, what did you think of the response of the Secret Service and then getting him out and into the armored vehicle?
I thought that, I mean, it was seconds. He was already, once it was determined what happened, and again, these CAT team, sniper teams, I mean, once they realized what it was, they did the work. They did the job. That's it. I mean, that's just cut and dry. They did a phenomenal job as far as that. Getting him out of there, I think with the protective shield, I think everybody knew exactly what was done. I mean, this is rehearsed over and over and over to where these guys can do this in their sleep. I think they got them out of there very, very, very quickly. I thought there was really good communication. I heard some different things, some different opinions about what they thought about certain actions of certain ages, but everything that I saw, I think they did a phenomenal job getting him out of there very, very quickly. Direct, the protective shield was great, and I think they did a great job as far as getting him off that stage.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk on the internet about the two female agents who looked like, there were multiple female agents, but there were two in particular. One couldn't reholster her weapon.
Right.
Another one was trying to get her sunglasses on. They both looked like they were, you know, of course you're going to be in a state of shock, but you didn't look like professionally trained military experts who were ready for this situation.
Yeah.
No, I understand. I did see that part. She seemed to be, you know, fumbling, you know, reholstering. And then again, you never know. I mean, in a that hit the fan situation, you're gonna do two things. You're gonna panic and you're gonna react to your training.
Right.
So that all comes down to, you know, how you were trained. I mean, everybody would love to think, you know, that you're gonna rise to the occasion, but you don't. You resort and you react to the last piece of training that you remembered. That's why training is so important, and the key to training is repetition over and over and over. That needs to become muscle memory, second nature, and you go on autopilot and you just react to that. So, but that adrenaline dump that they all got, I mean, they fought through it. Yes, did was there a little bit fumbling on one of two? Yes, there was, but I think all in all, right, you know, the recovery time was great, and they did the job, and they all got out of there, and they did a phenomenal job as far as getting former President Trump off the X, out of the danger zone.
That's a great point. Yeah. Scott, thank you for your service to the country. Thanks for coming on, and we'll link up to Secure Tech Consulting, LLC. Appreciate you.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.